Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. Among his many accomplishments, he joins us weekly. The films are Waves and Ford versus Ferrari. Vroom. Hi, David. How are you?
Vroom, vroom. Doing okay, Jill. How are you this week?
Equally. Equally okay.
Good, 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 good. I'm glad to hear it. Well, we'll see if we can fix that.
Exactly.
Right. No, actually, these are both pretty good movies. So I'm happy to report that, yeah, that they're probably among the better movies of the year. In fact, they definitely are. So let's begin with Waves. Waves is a family drama, even a family melodrama, I might say. And it is written and directed by Trey Edward Schultz. Trey Edward Schultz is an interesting filmmaker for more than one reason. One of the reasons is, well, he certainly does like to make movies about family subjects. He has made three films to date. The first one was called Krisha. The second one was called It Comes at Night. And now this third one, which is called Waves. He's also interesting because he does seem to like to, even though he is a white filmmaker, he does like to deal with African-American characters, not exclusively, but he does that very much in Waves, and he did that in It Comes at Night as well. So those are just a couple of interesting things about him, and he's also a very talented filmmaker. His first movie, Krisha, was very much a family drama, which centered, really pivoted entirely around a really remarkable performance by an actress named Krisha Fairchild, who played the leading character, a very disgruntled and unhappy woman. It Comes at Night is a science fiction horror tale that takes place in a kind of a post-apocalyptic world where there is a sort of a terrible plague that is going around, and we have a family which has hunkered down sort of in a hiding place in the woods, and everybody who comes near has to be met with suspicion and so forth. And there, as in Waves, there's a fair amount of racial interest and interracial relationships and so forth. So now Waves, which is not an apocalyptic horror movie, it's very much a family drama, and it deals with primarily, although not entirely, African-American characters. And it's a really good movie. It really expands and develops in a kind of a leisurely way. And it has, perhaps above all, a very unusual narrative structure, which I will illuminate in a moment. So what is Waves about? Waves is about a family, the main character of the movie, at least for a good long while, is a young man named Tyler, and he is a high school wrestling champion, and he's got a shot at the championships, and he's going to be going off to college, and he's going to wrestle. But near the very beginning of the movie, he comes into a real personal problem. He confronts a difficult situation. His shoulder has been injured, and he is told that if he doesn't stop wrestling right now and allow a really, really, really long time for the shoulder to heal up, he will do permanent damage, never wrestle again, never even have the full use of his shoulder again. But he is a young man. He is determined that he is not going to let anything interrupt what appears to be a stellar wrestling future for him. And he goes right on wrestling, and things do, as you might expect, get worse for him along the way. Now, during all of this agony about his future as a wrestler and his hoping to go to college on a wrestling championship and, scholarship. There is also drama within the family, especially between Tyler and his father, whose name is Ronald. At first, Ronald appears to be developed in the movie as a kind of a stereotypical mean father who is just going to push his son and not let the father works out alongside the son and is just as athletic as his son. But as it turns out, the relationship between them is much more complex than that, and the father is a more complex character than that. So we have really two things going along during the whole first part of this movie. We have the problem that Tyler is having with his shoulder and with the possible end of his wrestling career, which he is keeping very much to himself. And we have his conflict, or his relationship, I should say, with his father. Also with his sister, who is an important character in the movie along the way. So all of this sort of carries us through pretty much the first half of the movie. As I said, Tyler is facing this very, very difficult situation. Then he gets into another another very, very difficult situation of a different kind with his girlfriend, who turns out to be pregnant. And she does not want to cooperate with his plans for how they should deal with the situation. And now there is conflict also with this girlfriend. Then somewhere around, I would say around two-thirds of the way through the movie, Tyler, who is already facing a terrible situation with his shoulder and his wrestling, and also with his girlfriend and her pregnancy, comes into a third difficult situation, which is worse than difficult and which is kind of disastrous. And at this point, the movie pivots. And even though he remains a character in the movie, his sister now takes over as the main character of the movie. So that is the unconventional narrative structure that I mentioned before. His sister, Emily, who is younger than him, who is still very much a student, high school student, now becomes the main character of the movie, and she gets involved with a young – all of these people are African-American. She then gets involved with a young white boy who becomes her boyfriend, and that becomes another focus of the movie, which carries us through really to the end of the film. So we have a movie we showed this movie at my cinema club that I moderate in Washington, D.C. at the historical Avalon Theater, and although a lot of people really – really liked the movie, a lot of people were sort of thrown off by this unusual way of developing the narrative. And that is something I want to let people know about. You have to sort of be ready for this. The focus really changes. But if you're involved in the movie, if you're involved in its emotions and its psychology and its fairly complicated story, it really just carries you right along. And I thought it was very much like life. At certain points, certain people are really important and seem to be the center of everything. And then things can shift and evolve so that maybe other people become the center of everything. And again, even when Tyler, the main character for most of the movie, kind of becomes a less important character after a while, he's still very much in the movie and his presence is still there and we still get to think about him and about how he relates to all of this. So Waves is directed with real authority by Trey Edward Schultz, who is a fine screenwriter and a fine movie director. And it has a wonderful cast. I have to mention Taylor Russell, who is terrific as Emily, Lucas Hedges, who is wonderful as Luke, the white boy, who she eventually gets involved with. Sterling K. Brown is wonderful as the father. Everybody is just fine. The acting in the movie is terrific. The emotions of the movie are terrific. And again, it's a really finely wrought and deeply felt family drama. In this age of superhero movies, I think that any kind of a really serious, well-done family drama is to be welcomed, and Waves is exactly that. It's not a perfect film. It's uneven in some ways. It goes on kind of long, but I found it a very involving movie throughout, and I really had a good time watching it, if good time is the right way to describe a movie that is very, very heavy on really deeply felt family emotions of different kinds, some of them positive, some of them negative, all of them, though, very well worked through. Now, speaking of pivots, speaking of unconventional structure, I would like to change now to a movie which could not be more different in most ways, even though it also has a family element to it, Ford versus Ferrari, which is the new movie by James Mangold. James Mangold started off back in the middle 90s. That's when he did his first fairly major film, a movie called Heavy, very small-scale drama that showed he had a real talent for small-scale drama. In more recent years, he has, I regret to report, turned over to the superhero world, making big tentpole-type movies. But now he has made a movie which sort of combines these things. Ford versus Ferrari is it's a family drama on a lot of levels. It's certainly a movie with a lot of huge scope and action to it, so that sort of plugs into the tentpole movie part of his career. But it's a really good movie. I had a good time watching it. It also goes on for quite a while. It's about 2.5 hours long, but I really never got bored, never got tired of it, and I'm not a big fan of action movie, so it shows this movie has more going for it than merely a lot of racing down the track. Because yes, as you might expect from that title, Ford versus Ferrari, this is a car movie, and it is a car racing movie. And it is based on real events, based on things that really happened. So what we have here are a couple of people who work in the car business in America. One of them is a car maker named Carroll Shelby. He is played in a very, very good performance by Matt Damon, a very good actor. And the other one is a Brit who lives in America, works in America, works on cars, named Ken Miles, and he is played by the wonderful Christian Bale. And there the two of them are kind of they've been a sort of a team, and we discover at the beginning that the Christian Bale character is very hot-tempered and can really sort of lose control of himself and get very angry and this and that. He really cares about his work. He's basically just a mechanic, but he has an eye on bigger things. He really has ideas about how to design cars and how to build cars. And what happens is that through plot machinations that I won't get into, Carol Shelby, the Matt Damon character, gets drafted to design a car for the Ford Motor Company, which is kind of interested in getting into the racing business. And the movie, on one level, is a kind of a big competition between Ford, the American company, and Ferrari, the Italian company. And in fact, it is even more of a personal rivalry between Henry Ford II, who runs the Ford Motor Company at this point, and Enzo Ferrari, who of course runs the Ferrari company over in Italy. These are very, very different kinds of companies. As we're told near the beginning, Ford makes more cars in, oh, I think it's more cars in a day than Ferrari makes in a whole year. Ford, of course, is always known for the big mass production of quality cars. Ferrari is known for the very meticulous one-by-one production of really beautifully, magnificently crafted cars. So it's a it's a rivalry between these two companies. It's a rivalry between the eponymous heads of these two companies, and it becomes a rivalry between the team that Ford recruits, Carol Shelby and Ken Miles, and the team that is working for Ferrari over in Italy. And it is all going to come to fruition in a tremendous race. In fact, there's a series of races, but there's ultimately going to be a huge race, and that is the famous 24-hour race. Le Mans in France, where all of this is going to be tested out at the climax of the film. We have other races along the way, but the grand climax and grand finale of the movie does come at the Le Mans race. Who is going to win this whole thing? Now, one of the marvelous things about Ford versus Ferrari, in fact, my favorite quality of it, is that it's a real acting movie. As much action as there is, and as much racing around the track and down the track, and cars going at lickety-split and crashing and burning and all of this stuff, it's an acting movie. It really is. And mainly it's an acting movie with Matt Damon and Christian Bale. And they have these wonderful actors. They are both excellent. Have very different acting styles. Matt Damon is fairly contained and always kind of has control of his emotions and control of his movements and control of his voice and control of all of this. Now, Christian Bale, of course, also has all of that total control, but he's playing a character who does not have that sort of control. So Christian Bale does what he is best at. He emotes. So we have Matt Damon, who is always keeping a lid on his acting, and we have Christian Bale, who is always just kind of letting the lid off of his acting. And it's wonderful to see the interplay between these two excellent actors with their different styles as each one interacts with the other and each character interacts with the other. That's my favorite part of it. I will confess right now that Christian Bale is one of my favorite actors. I interviewed him many, many years ago when he was a kid and he came along in Empire of the Sun and became what one thought might be a one-shot performance, but he became, of course, one of the great American movie stars. And they're both excellent in Ford versus Ferrari. I also have to mention Tracy Letts, who plays Henry Ford II. Tracy Letts is a very gifted actor and playwright, and he plays Henry Ford II and has at one point one of the great crying scenes in any recent movies. It's not a conventional crying scene. He's not overcome with grief or anything like that. It's very different circumstances. And it's a moment which I think has been overrated by some critics, but it's really interesting to watch. So anyway, it's great to watch Tracy Letts and really, by and large, a terrific supporting cast for this movie. Ford versus Ferrari is, as you may expect from the subject, a male-dominated movie. There are really very few female characters and no really important female characters. So I would say that's one drawback of the film, but I guess it sort of comes with the territory of the movie. Better maybe to have a movie that frankly focuses on the men than to have a sort of female characters or love stories or things sort of tacked on. I do wish it were a little bit more balanced in the gender department. But I really did have a good time watching it. The racing scenes are marvelously well done. There's an enormous amount of action, an enormous amount of color, and an enormous amount of human drama. And, you know, a lot of the times you're worried for these people. These are racing cars, and they're going really, really fast, and they are being tested a lot of the times. And sometimes there's a big question about whether the brakes are going to hold. Think about that for a moment. There you are going at maybe 120 miles an hour, and you're not 100% sure if the brakes are going to to kick in when you push down on that pedal. So that sort of thing lends a whole lot of enormous suspense to the movie. And again, it's really, really well handled. So the two movies I'm talking about today, Waves and Ford versus Ferrari, are both long movies. They're both very carefully worked out movies. One is pretty quiet and melodramatic. The other one is pretty extroverted and full of action and color. And I had a really good and interesting time watching them both. So I have to say, it's a pretty good week at the movies, Jill. And that is my optimistic story for this week.
It most certainly is. Two for two, David Sterrett, Films in Focus. The films Waves and Ford versus Ferrari.